You're listening to the Scottish Football Forums podcast, the home of Scottish football banter.
A very good evening, everybody, and welcome to the SFF podcast, the Women's Football Special here for October. And what a month we've had, I can tell you that from the Old Firm derbies, we've had Scotland games, everything included in. What a lineup I've got tonight. We'll start with the one that's been on a few times already this season, making her third appearance this season, is Eva Murray. Eva, how are we?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, David. Thanks very much for having me back. I'm looking forward to another good discussion. It's always good on these podcasts.
And we've got a pundit, because she knows her football, it's Claire Gemmell.
Hi, David. Thanks very much for having me on. I'm looking forward to tonight. Thank you.
No problem at all. So, first and foremost, we'll look back on Sunday there, just in terms of the estimate PL1. Eva, I think it's only right to start with yourself, and obviously Celtic won Rangers 2. It was a massive win for Rangers, but the manner in which they did it was the most pleasing aspect.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was a great match. I think we were saying just before we came on there, it was quite a quiet, sedate first half, and the second half, as soon as Celtic got a goal, they switched off, it seemed, and Rangers switched on. Yeah, it was a masterclass, but no, it was a good result, and it was a good travelling support as well, which I was quite surprised with. But yeah, no, it was good to be there and good to experience it.
Yeah, was there an idea of a crowd at all? Because I was watching the game on Sky, it didn't look a decent crowd.
Yeah, no, on both sides, to be fair, it was a decent crowd, and like I say, I think Celtic always get a decent support when they play at home, but for Rangers had a good turnout as well, a lot of families and stuff, which is really always nice to see. But yeah, good travelling support.
Celtic took the lead, Eva, through Caitlin Hayes. That's arguably where Celtic's biggest threat is, set pieces. They are very good in the forward lines in terms of final third and all that penetration and terminologies that we say in everyday life in the modern day football ways now. But yeah, the threat came from set pieces. They took the lead through Caitlin Hayes. A very good ball, a very good header from Caitlin.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think you're spot on there. Just from the start of this season, that's where a lot of their attack has came from, a lot of their goals have came from. And I think the only worry for Celtic might be is if you know, other teams start to switch on and see that a lot of their attacks are coming from set pieces, just to get on top of that and obviously try and stop them. But yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. It was a good goal. I think it caught a lot of the Rangers team by surprise, just how it went in.
Do you think that just tells you the difference in mentality, even without Rangers? They could have crumbled after going a goal behind, and they have crumbled in previous times, but they didn't. Any, as we like to call her, Kirsty McLean, pops up with that equaliser.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, like I say, I think as soon as that Celtic goal went in, it wasn't heads down. You actively saw the Rangers switched on, and that goal by Kirsty McLean was quite something, you know, right along from Kirsty Howe at the assist was quite special. And like I say, not just to even turn off when they got the equaliser, to keep on plugging away, and then that Lizzie Arnott cross. It's great to see Lizzie Arnott back on the pitch, but that cross was something, and Rio Hardy, just the run she made was quite special.
I thought the Rangers looked a bit more resurgent going forward. They looked a lot more up for it. The desire was the most important aspect for me.
Yeah, I think we spoke about it before, just how close last season was, not giving away anything. And I think Rangers are coming into this season, we're a third way through it now, with that mindset of not giving up and just fighting till the end. And it's working out for them, from what I can see.
Me and Claire were speaking about this just before you came on, Eva. Leagues aren't won in October. That Sunday's not going to define how this is going to all go, but at the same token as well, I think that's a massive win for Rangers, just in terms of that mindset and mentality shift, that because they probably needed an important win in that caliber.
Yeah, and they're the only team in the league unbeaten, top of the league going into the international break. Yeah, I think they needed that to finish off this kind of section of the league and get that confidence in and get them set for the rest of the season.
Absolutely. When you look at it from a Rangers perspective, they obviously played some very good football. Quinn, I'm going to get you to come in, please. Have you played with Kirsty MacLean before?
Yeah, briefly played with Kirsty. She was still part of the youth setup when I was there, but had been kind of in and out of the first team training and stuff while I was still there. Obviously, just given a promise as a player, they like to kind of try and include younger players in training before they even maybe make it to like a game setting. So yeah, she was in and about certainly for my last season at points. So it's pleasing to see how far she's come, and obviously a regular on the team just now. So. And she's proven her worth. Joe Potter's given her opportunity after opportunity. She's probably one of the first names in the team sheet for her. And she pops up the goal on Sunday. So you can't ask for more, really.
Did she have the nickname Eddie when you were with her?
No, I was actually watching another interview she had done. And she said that it was, I think it was Kirsty Howitt. And kind of remember who else she said that might come back to me. I think Kirsty wasn't happy that there's two Kirsties in the team, so they then come up with this nickname for her, Annie. So I think it was only last season that happened, if my memory serves me from her interview. So no, she wasn't known as that then, but I'm not surprised. She's obviously got some passing that on her, so that's obviously where it's came from.
Yeah, absolutely. When you look at Rangers this season, Claire, they have that difference about them now. As Eva said, they probably got that purpose in the final third, but also, as we kind of touched upon off the record, they obviously know how to defend. They're defending like they are to defend. It's not like they're just defending 20, 30 yards and then they're inviting pressure on again. They're defending as if they want to defend.
They are. I mean, I think when Joe Potter came in at the start of this season and changed the formation, it did take them a while, I'll be honest. I thought they looked quite vulnerable at the back at times for the first few games, but I think they've rectified that now. I just don't think they were getting the balance quite right to start with. But it's just because it's new, it just takes time, and that's the thing. But I definitely think that they've got that right now, and I think in their last few performances, you can see that they look very solid at the back. Trying to see where a team's going to score against them. It's going to be a wonder strike, might be a set piece. You've touched on Caitlin Hayes. It's just a strength he's got. She's got, you know what she's going to do, but you can't stop it. And that is the truth. There's been many players like that over the years. She's just so good at what she does. Cathy Hill's not exactly not good in there, but still can't prevent her from scoring these goals. She's done it time and time against Rangers. So but really, on a whole, as you said, I think, yeah, defensively, they're looking really, really good. And going forward, they're looking good. So the whole kind of unit seems to be clicking right now for them, which is ideal and what they wanted, particularly coming into this Old Firm game on Sunday there.
You make a point about Cathy Hill there, Claire. Is she the type of defender that will try and duck away from those situations, or was it a case of a lapse of concentration and Hayes basically just does what she does?
No, Cathy Hill is a very powerful, very aggressive player. If you've watched her over the last couple of seasons while she's been here, you see that in her. You've seen it on Sunday, some of the tackles she put in. So it's not that. I think for me, it's just Caitlin Hayes is very good at what she does. She is very good at attacking the ball. She uses her body very well and prevents her opponent from jumping properly. She's so good at it. And as I said, it is difficult to try and mark. It's just something that you need to try and think out the box when you're actually in the moment. And I'm yet to find a team that's managed to do it, because I think she's probably scored against every team with her head.
Absolutely. Eva, are you surprised how vulnerable Celtic were defensively on Sunday?
Yeah, I think especially in the second half, I think, like I said, I think they just kind of crumbled. There was a few good performances from like Sheng Mengyu and things like that. But yeah, I think once Rangers' first goal went through, and they just kind of crumbled, and they did look incredibly vulnerable. I think I was looking at a stat, something like Rangers got six shots on target, like double the actual shots in the second half that Celtic only got four. something like that. No, it definitely was their you know, that's where they kind of crumbled, and that's where their weakness was, especially in the second half, especially after a first half that was pretty even, pretty solid from both teams. You know, there wasn't any real chances taken, but the defence was the weak point, I think, for Celtic, especially in the second half.
It's funny because in terms of who I think is the best defense in the league in terms of their setup, in terms of organization, it probably is Celtic with Coley Craig, Kelly Clark, Hayes, and they've even got players that can lie off from off the bench that can go and do a job if them players are injured or suspended, perhaps.
Yeah, and I think especially you've seen, I mean, Chloe Craig has got one of the highest, you know, highest number of goals in this season so far as well. So she's obviously a very versatile player, but and she had a good game on Sunday for the most part as well. But for whatever reason, it just in the latter stages of the match it did fall apart, and Rangers were managed to get through them. I think there was quite a few runs from Rachel McLaughlin. She took it right the way up through the defence. So yeah, no, it was definitely their weakest point for Celtic, I think. Which is unusual, like you say.
Absolutely. Claire, were you surprised from a neutral perspective and seeing how there was deficiencies in that sort of backline?
I think for Celtic, you know, and I think the problem actually with all the what you call the bigger teams in the league or whatever is their defence is not tested often. And I mean that in the most respectful way. It's just a lot of the time they have a lot of the ball. So it's then when you come up against these teams who are putting you under pressure, and Rangers are a very possession-dominated team, which is something Celtic are not used to facing week in, week out, where their defence is under so much pressure. So I think that's probably why you've seen, well, the weaknesses in their defence as such, because Rangers do move the ball very, very well. I think the signings that they've made kind of link the middle to front better than they did last season. So that's probably moved Celtic even more than they're used to. And I think it's just trying to come to terms with that. And if you're trying to do that in a 90-minute period or 45-minute period, as Eva said, not really too much happened in the first half. It was quite, you know, trying to suss each other out. But after that, and Rangers really kind of turned the screw on them, it's just moving them about well, I think. And in really 45 minutes trying to adjust to that can be difficult.
We are 12, 13 minutes into this podcast. I'm astonished that neither of you have mentioned Rio Hardy yet because, first and foremost, what a sign for Rangers. And secondly, it's actually, I don't know how to describe it, but I was surprised watching the telly on Sunday to find she scored her 14th goal this season. I was surprised as anybody to find that stat.
No, definitely. She's been some signing for them, to be honest with you. I think she's come in and she's probably exactly the type of player that I'm talking about that links well between middle to front. She can drop in and she can also go in behind and she can score goals. And she's absolutely proven her worth, you know, in the first 11 games. 14 goals, scored, played 11 games, scored 14 goals. You can't really argue with that stat. And it's not just scoring the goals, she sets them up as well. So she has been some signing. And I think she's not the only one, right enough. I think Rachel McLaughlin's been one of the most important players for Rangers this season. I think her performances, she is an attacking fullback, that is her position. She's obviously been asked to play a slightly different position this year, but you'll see by the way that they play that she still likes to bomb on a lot. She's done it a lot on Sunday. And I think if you don't allow her to do that, you lose a big part of her game. So I'm not surprised that Joe Potter still actually wanting her to do that.
That's a very good point, Eva, because looking at it on the telly on Sunday, there was actually a lot of times where McLaughlin was making that late runs into the box. There was a lot of times where McLaughlin, she wasn't wanting to stay still. There was a lot of times where she was looking behind that third or fourth option, so to speak.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think as Claire said there, I think it's really exciting and really good that Joe Potter's allowing her to continue doing that, because we can see what she can actually do when she's allowed to, you know, allowed that space and allowed that time to actually do that. And she and Sunday it was phenomenal. I mean, you would watch her like, you know, get past quite a few people, and then make the key pass or whatever it may be. But no, she's some player, and I think she has been absolutely crucial to. to Rangers this season. But I mean, she's a phenomenal player, Rachel McLaughlin, and she's again one of those kind of versatile players who can play in that kind of almost hybrid position where she can, you know, play further up if she needs to. And like you said, that is her meant to be her position.
Is this, I'm not going to say the phrase of reality check here, but is this a wake-up call for Celtic, or are we not looking at it that way? Because you can look at it either way. You can look at it as a disappointing defeat for Celtic, or you can look at it on the other hand and say, 11 new signs for Celtic. Yes, they've bent themselves in very quickly, but at the same token, was it a step too far?
I don't think so. I think I heard Fran Alonso call it irrelevant after the match on Sunday, and I think I was in one of the reports. I think he said the result was irrelevant. But I think they need to see it as a, you know, I think they need to see it as a, it was one of their biggest tests, if not their biggest test this season. And they didn't manage to get the result they wanted. So maybe it is a bit of reassessment. I'm not sure. But we'll see what happens with that. Like you say, they've had a number of signings over the summer, who, like you say, have bedded in pretty well. They've also had a couple of injuries. I think Laversky's still out. Maybe they should see it as a reassessment almost again going into the international break and that the second part of the season.
Absolutely. Right, away from the Celtic v Rangers chat, we're going to go to Hearts against Motherwell. Well, first and foremost, Glasgow City against Montrose was postponed due to Storm Bardon. Of course, Montrose heavily affected with the storms in this area, and thoughts and prayers out to everybody associated with that in this tough time. But off the Hearts, because Mavo and Quill, you were there, a very good show from Hearts.
It was, they were, they performed really, really well. You know, I thought, just as we touched on before we started, I thought they started maybe a bit slower than they would like in terms of retaining the ball, keeping possession. They were turning the ball over quite a bit to start with, which was allowing Motherwell to come into the game. So it was a little scrappy at points in the first half, but you know that they were playing the long ball over the top of Motherwell, who just couldn't cope with it. Motherwell were playing three at the back, and they just weren't addressing it at all. So Lockwood, countless times getting in the game, scored two goals, set up a goal. She was actually phenomenal on Sunday for them, to be honest with you. But really getting into the second half, they really did take control and control possession, control the pace of the game. So I think Eve Oleb will be really happy with her performance. I thought it was really, really good. They'll probably be a bit upset that it's going to be an international break, given that their next game's Glasgow City. They probably wanted to take the momentum straight into this Sunday, but you know, I'm sure they'll build in that in the training ground. But yeah, I was very impressed with them on Sunday.
Apologies, there was actually a bit of a break there between you speaking, so apologies for that. Very good show indeed from Hearts. They're back to their scoring traits again. They're obviously showing the quality that they have at the right end of the park, but exactly the same thing as well. It was good that they obviously had a bit more of a good defensive shape about them on Sunday.
No, they did. Obviously, they've lost six goals in the last two games, which I know Eva wasn't too happy about, just probably the manner, some of the goals that they lost as well. So they were obviously going out to try and correct that and try and give a better performance in that. And I think they really did do that, to be honest. Motherwell didn't really look like scoring a goal. You know, they didn't create an out-and-out opportunity other than the goal that they scored, which was an absolute screamer. So I think you need to give them credit there defensively. But, you know, I think the thing about Hearts is they'll always find a goal. They're very good going forward. It's just whether they can keep it tight at the back when they play against these, you know, the top three, because really they've not taken in off any of the top three teams yet. And that's certainly what they'll have their eye on.
Absolutely. How would you assess before? Because I actually had a bit of confidence from Mavo this one, especially after the scoreline against Dundee United.
I'm sure they did come into the game with confidence, you know, given that they've won 6-0 and that they've kept a clean sheet going into that game. I think the thing is what Motherwell need to remember as well is, you know, they're not full time, like the top half of the table, so it's difficult. You're almost already, you know, a losing battle trying to come in against teams that are training full time when you're not. A lot of these girls have got jobs and maybe uni, etc., and then are still training on top of that. So I think you could see the fitness in the end coming through, which normally tends to do in these games, if that's the case. So it's trying to build in what they've got and how they can make the best out of their squad and their players. And you know, I think they gave a better account of themselves second half. I thought they were defensively a bit better than they were in the first half. They changed their shape, which I felt suited them better. It's just for me, they probably don't create enough in the final third. And that probably does just come down to the fact that Hearts can maybe close them down quicker. They can't move the ball as quick, but they need to find a way to try and create more in the final third. Otherwise, you know, it's going to be really difficult to take points off anybody above them.
Yeah, because I mean, Motherwell have had a few decent results so far this season. At the same token, as well, they've had a few complete disappointments as well, especially a defeat to Montrose recently, which did leave a lot of people scratching their heads after that one.
It might have done, but you know, that's the thing with football. And I actually said this to you before we come on, you know, football's got a way of coming back to bite you. You know, you need to prepare for, and I'm not suggesting Motherwell didn't do that for this game, and I'm not taking anything away from Montrose, but I'm just saying, you know, you need to prepare for every game correctly and go out and give it a good account of yourself, because if you don't, teams are going to take advantage of that. And you know, Montrose had a slow start to the season, but they're starting to slowly find their feet. They've obviously, that result with Motherwell, they've drawn my heart. So, you know, you can't underestimate them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Even when you look at this game, I think it was. Would you put Sunday down as a statement win, or would you put it down as back to winning ways, or would it be over dramatizing it? Sorry, if you were to put it down as a statement win.
I think Hearts needed that win. I think especially when it was such a close match against Spartans the week before, and then going into, you know, the next match. I know it's not until the following week against Glasgow City, but I think they needed to win it and also win it well, and that's what they've done. But I will say, I did see Amy Anderson's goal for Motherwell, and it was an absolute belter. It was quite something. So, but yeah, no, I think Hearts had to put something out there saying that, you know, get the goals in again. They might not be in contention for the top three, but it might be a case of, you know, the fourth, fifth, sixth might be closer than we expect. You just never know. Again, that's football. So they want to get the goals in and not make sure it's not close and get back to their winning ways. Because I think Hearts had a solid season last year. They've started off pretty well, I would say, this season, and they probably just want to keep that up and not have any more close calls like they did against Spartans. Was it 4-3 against Spartans?
Do you think that fourth to eighth place within the SMPL1 is so open this year?
I think when you look at the point, even at the points just now, it's much clo probably much closer than how it ended last year. But yeah, I think you just never know. I think Hibs have obviously had a mixture of performances. Same with Partick Thistle, so you just never know how that's gonna go.
Because I mean, everybody's got their own strengths and capabilities. I mean, as we all know, the SMPL1 has three different sections of the table. You've got arguably a three horse title race. You've got fourth to eighth that are just as competitive as each other on their respective days, and then you've probably got that ninth to 12th.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair assessment. And I think especially, and I know I mentioned the fourth, fifth, sixth, I think that's sometimes what we look at. But just looking at, you know, Motherwell are also probably in that contention as well. I think they're on 12 just now. So yeah, no, I think that there's that's where you split the three. That's where they split the league up into those kind of three sections just now. But it could be wide open. Like I say, I know we're not at the very beginning of the season. We're about third way through, but it just seems much closer than it's been in the past, especially in that middle section. So you just never know. There could be a few more shock results. You talked about the Montrose one there, there's probably gonna be a few more still to come. And all it takes is if teams get a bit complacent, or they think that they don't have to do very much, but into a match and a team could shock them. So you just never know.
Sunday Claire tell you how good Hearts are.
Sorry, how good Hearts are?
Ah, yeah. Does that Sunday tell you how good Hearts are?
Oh, sorry, it just broke up there. Yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly from their point of view showing that that was maybe just a slip up against Montrose when they've drawn with them, and that the fact that they've left it so tight against Spartans, they're probably wanting to say, well, actually, we can control games, we can win convincingly. So I think they will be happy with their performance. I don't think you can judge them just in that one game, though, to say, it tells you how good they are. I think they did perform well on Sunday, but seeing how good a team is about performing through a season. It's not about performing in one game or two games. So really, you'll see how good they are at the end of the season with their table finish, which I'm sure they'll be hoping will be in the top three. But whether they can manage to do that or not is another story, but they'll certainly not be wanting to give up fourth place.
Just before I continue, I forgot to go and focus on the top three, and I actually forgot to ask another question, which is completely remiss of me. Is there a top three title race this year? Is it a three horse title race, do you reckon?
I do. I think it is, yeah. Basically, well, we see how close it is at the minute, with obviously Celtic being at the top, now it's Rangers at the top. And I know obviously Glasgow City, I think, are on 25 points, but they've still got a game in hand. So it's well within each of their grasps. I would never write any of them off. I think they're all three squads are very, very talented. They've got good coaching staff, so I think, yeah, it's up for any of them to win it. And I think, although Celtic have been at the top, now Rangers, I think it will change again. I don't think it will remain this way. So I think, yeah, every game will be seen as a must win. I know that they won't come out and say that, it'll just be like, oh, we're focusing on the next game and this and that. But they will all know how important it is to not drop points against anybody, because that second or third place or whatever position they're in, they'll be looking to overtake them.
How the Rangers affiliation that you do, Claire? Have you spoken to anybody, or do you, what impressions do you get of Joe Potter as a manager?
I like her, to be honest with you. She's obviously, this is her first job up in Scotland, so she's just learning the league up here. But I like her. I think she's very focused. I think she knows what she wants from her squad. I think she likes her squad to work hard. I think you can see that by the way she is on the side. She expects high standards, I think. So I think she will be, and I think she has been good for the squad. She's obviously brought in changes in terms of shape, in terms of the background staff and players. But I think everything she's done is a positive. I think Rangers massively needed a shake up, which has happened, and I think they're reaping the benefits of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, go to the other half of Edinburgh now. Hibs 8, Hamilton 1. Eva, this was probably a statement for Rangers. Pardon me. That was probably a statement for Hibs, should I say.
Yeah, I think especially the 8-1 might not make up for the 7-0 the week before, but it does show that the confidence is back and their heads aren't down after the loss to Rangers at Ibrox. But yeah, no, absolutely, I think you're right. It's a statement win, and I think that they needed it too. I think they've had a mixture of results in recent weeks. Like I say, from the most like the 7-0 loss to a couple of wins, but they needed that kind of statement one to get them moving forward, I think.
The caliber of the win and the way in which they scored their goals will be the most impressive aspect for Grant Scott.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I didn't manage to catch a lot of the Hibs match, but no, from what I've heard and from what I've read from the kind of reviews from it. They kind of just dominated the match the full time, and kind of showed their worth. And again, I think it goes back to the a lot of teams' confidence might have been down after the previous week's result, but they came back and showed that they're still up for it. And again, it goes back to what we're just discussing there, that fight for the middle table there. Hibs are another team who might be hoping for getting that, getting into that top three, but ultimately it might be the fight for that fourth, fifth place, and they'll be absolutely fighting Hearts or whoever it may be by that point for that fourth place spot.
Yeah, absolutely. For Hamilton, well, they'll be disappointed, will they?
Yeah, no, I think they will, especially after, they got a draw against Montrose the week before. I think that was a 1-1 draw. But Hamilton have had a very a tough start to their season. I think they're the only team that have not had not the only team, but they've not had a win yet. So they will be disappointed how just the nature of that result.
Claire, you know Robert Watson quite well, do you?
No, of them, yeah. I've spoke to him a few times. I wouldn't say we're best pals, but yeah, no.
Yeah, how disappointed do you think he'll be about Sunday? Because Hamilton were a bit of the same. You looked at how they've been playing in recent weeks, and you had that tinge of confidence about them that some of the goals they concede is quite poor. I mean that in the most respectful way possible. But yes, even Robert Watson touched on it after the game about how he wasn't happy with some of the goals conceded.
I think it's difficult. See, when you've played, 10 games, 11 games, and you've not won, it's so hard to keep your confidence up. And it is. And it just seems to make everything seem worse when you go out and then you find yourself you're onto the next week and you've still not won a game. So I think for him, yeah, probably defensively, when I've looked back at some of their games, I certainly think that some of their defending needs to be improved on. I think if they're want to get results, they're going to need to improve in that. You can't afford to be, losing from their point of view, they want to be losing 5, 6 goals every game, which seems to be happening, certainly when it's not teams that are kind of down that end of the table. So it's about trying to turn the corner on that. And obviously Montrose were in a similar position where they were finding it difficult to get a result, but have managed to turn a corner. So it's how Hamilton can manage to get themselves to do that, which is going to be really difficult.
Absolutely, because I've seen Hamilton myself in the flesh this season, Claire, and as much as they had deficiencies defensively, I still thought Hamilton had a good bit about them. I still felt I actually praised Hamilton after that Aberdeen game, because as much as Aberdeen were all over them and extremely ruthless, at the same time they played some good stuff in the day.
Yeah, I mean they've got a capable squad. That's the thing. It's not as if, I mean, they do have some good players in there, but it's just trying to get what you're doing in the training ground to then come out on the pitch and then actually trying to get the goals from that. But they really need to sort out their defensive issues first, I would say. You want to stop leaking goals, then you can try and concentrate on scoring goals. Because if you're working so hard to score one goal, but you're losing five at the other end, you're never going to win the game. So it is going to be a difficult task, but it really is just back to the training ground and trying to really tighten up on positioning and where folks should be and when they should press and when they should set off teams and really, really try and tighten up the back and try and stop losing as many goals as they are losing in, every other game, it seems.
When Hibs conceded 7 at Rangers last week, Claire, they obviously had the goalie, I think it's Katie Freyne, she picked up an injury at half time, something that Grant Scott spoke to the press about after the game and said about how she was struggling to breathe and everything at half time. When you take that into consideration, had Freyne been fully fit, that's probably not a 7-0 game last week.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because if they're not on, then you don't know what's going to happen when they're on the pitch. I think for Hibs, they're probably not looking at the fact that she's unavailable or has been unavailable to continue, and just how what they've done with the players that they've had left on the pitch. Because you don't know what's going to happen down the line. She might not be available for another game or a cluster of games for any reason. So you need to be able to still put out a performance with the squad that you've got left. So I'm sure they weren't happy that they lost 7 goals. Hibs are a very good side. They've been at the top of the league for many, many years. competing, so they'll probably not be happy the fact that they've lost 7-0, but at the end of the day, for them as well, they just need to go away and look at how they can improve in that, because like Eva said, you know, they've had a bit of inconsistent performances over the season. They can't seem to quite get around a consistent performance, and that again will be an issue, particularly if they want to go for fourth place, or as you'd said, David, you know, if they are looking to push on higher. If you can't get consistency, it's never going to happen.
I've watched Hibs a few times this season, and they look very, very good in the eye. When they were on the ball, they won't dominate the ball, but they're very, very good when they're on the ball.
Yeah, they are good on the ball. They're a very good team. You can't take that away from them. And I think the thing as well is Grant Scott's come in at the start of this season and he's trying to build a squad into what he wants as well. So that also takes time. So I think folk need to remember that. And then the players there need to remember that as well. It doesn't just happen overnight. It takes time. So, and I think you can see with the way they're playing in terms of, as you speak about, their attacking play. They do have very good passages of play and the understanding's starting to come along, but you can't then go into a game the following week and then lose 7 goals at the other side. You know, that's what you'll be wanting to rectify and sort out, because how are you meant to compete for anything if you can't get the consistency and performance?
Eva, how was last week at Ibrox for Rangers and Hibs? Because I was in another game I was supposed to be at, but I was stuck up in naughty Peterhead where I was covering the Peterhead game. Absolutely frozen in blizzard conditions.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, Hibs are a good team. Let's not get away from that. I think they were unfortunate against Rangers at Ibrox. Rangers put on a very dominant performance, obviously, at home at Ibrox. It was a big spe it was quite a special occasion for them. But yeah, Hibs are a good team. They just didn't click Ibrox, to be fair. I think they were unfortunate that the Rangers managed to take 7 off them. It might have been to do with the keeper having to go off. But ultimately, had to go past 10 other people before it got to the keeper. You know, 10 other players. So yeah, I think they were just unfortunate, because I was looking at the last time that they played, and I think it was, you know, 2-0, 3-0, maybe 4-0 that Rangers won. But yeah, the 7-0 was just unfortunate for them, to be honest, because they are a good team. I think they showed some really good football, even at Ibrox. Yeah, just unlucky.
Claire, I'm going to focus on Glasgow City fairly briefly here. Are you looking too much into what's happened in the last few weeks in the Champions League for them, or are you looking at it and saying it's a massive learning curve?
I think the Champions League's just difficult at the minute, because, I mean, really, my view on it's great to get there. It's amazing to get there. But the problem is you're going up at another level. And if you're not playing at that level every week, you can't just cut your fingers and then you're competing at that level. You know, everything's a second or two quicker. So, and you saw that when they were playing both legs, you know, that team's movement was just unbelievable. Some of the goals they scored, and I think for Glasgow City, it's a massive learning curve. That I mean, they'll be disappointed. Obviously, they've not went through, but they'll look at it to the fact that they've got there, and they'll look to see, right, can we win the league next year or get into the Champions League next year? And if we do, how can we improve against these teams? You know, I don't think they should be too disheartened at the fact that they went out, because they were playing a quality side.
Because I've got to tell you, not embarrassing, but I've got to tell you a funny chat line here. So me, John Bleasdale, another guy that we know, we were speaking about Glasgow City game when we were playing at Petershill. We were speaking about it before the game, and folk were on to me, they're like, "What do you think about the game?" And I was like, "I think Glasgow City have a chance tonight because I don't know much about Norwegian football, but I imagine it's not the same level as Scotland." And then boom, 3-4-0.
Honestly, I thought they were so good, particularly in the first half. Don't get me wrong, you know, I listened to Leanne Ross talk after the game, and she was obviously unhappy with the way Glasgow City had started the game, and particularly the first half, which I would agree with. You know, I don't think they probably gave an account of themselves that they wanted to give. They were second to everything, you know, probably sat off them. But you can't take away from the movement and some of the finishing. It was really, really, really good to watch. So I just think at the end of the day that the better team went through.
Yeah, it's actually been quite an interesting aspect to cover here because I know after they played Aberdeen when they won 3-2, I know Leanne Ross wasn't happy with her team's performance.
Yeah, and then going, you mean going into the Champions League match against, yeah.
Well, I meant after the Aberdeen game, after the
Oh.
bad game on the Wednesday.
Yeah. No, I think is I think one of the big things is like there's so many matches taking place as well. And again, it's as Claire was saying, to go from having to play at one level to another, and then you're obviously there's still like there's still exhaustion and stuff. There is maybe an issue as well, and it's something we discussed previously in one of the podcasts. Is just the number of matches all at one go, and then at different kind of at the league level, and then obviously the Champions League level. But yeah. I'm not too sure. I actually didn't hear that from Leanne Ross, but I can imagine it must be disappointing, especially after the performance against SK Brag and then to come into the Aberdeen match.
Yeah, well, basically, just to give you a bit of context here, Eva, basically, Aberdeen were 2-1 up after 48 minutes. They basically won each half time, and Aberdeen scored, and the Glasgow City scored 2 goals in 4 minutes. And I was watching Leanne Ross's interview back, and I was expecting Leanne to be pretty content, but Claire knows Leanne Ross more than anybody else, and you know that Leanne Ross has that dig about her, that she wants a bit of perfection.
No, she does, but that's the thing, isn't it? That's what I like about her. I did when I played with her. I liked it about her as a player as well. She always wants better, and I think that's important. You should never settle. But I think what you need to remember as well is it shows character to come back and score two goals in 4 minutes. So you have to see also the positives, even though you're looking for improvement. That is, they could have not done that and potentially lost or drew the game. So particularly obviously coming off of the Champions League defeat, then knowing they're going to play another Champions League game on the Wednesday. So although you are looking for perfection, which I really don't think there's anything wrong with, I probably have a bit of that personality myself. But yeah, I think she has to take the positives as well. You know what I mean? It is a lot, as Eva was saying, a lot of matches in a short space of time. So the fact that they've turned the match around, they've still got the 3 points, that's all that matters at the end of the day.
Okay, on to Scotland now, and Claire, I think it's only right to start with yourself because we need to go and speak about somebody you know, Chelsea Cornet. I think it's excellent from Chelsea Cornet to be included in the Scotland squad.
So do I. She obviously got called up for the first time a few months back, and I think it was long overdue, to be honest. I think Chelsea's a brilliant player. I think she goes very unnoticed at times in games, and the work she does. And I've said this before on a number of occasions. I think it's then when you remove her from the team, you actually then notice much an important role she plays. So I'm delighted for her that she's got in there, and I hope she gets an opportunity. That's the thing, you can get in there, but you actually need to get on the pitch to show what you can do. So fingers crossed for her because she's got an abundance of talent. So. I think Guy, it's great for her, and I know she'll be delighted.
Eva, do you know much about Sandy McKeown at all?
I don't, and it was one of the surprising names on the call up sheet when I looked at it. I've been watching a bit of the training stuff that the Scotland team is putting up, but yeah, it's exciting to see young players coming up and getting their opportunity. But yeah, I don't know much about Sandy McKeown though.
It's actually funny because I know a few English journalists, like women's football journalists, and they were on about Sandy McKeown, and I was going myself, going, "Who?"
Yeah, no, I think it's one of those weird ones because quite a few people have again just looking at the kind of articles that have been written ahead of the match against the Netherlands, and a lot of people are saying Sandy McKeever, and I think has a cap for England already, or it must be
Okay.
an unders level, but yeah, no, it's exciting. If like I say, it's always nice to see young players coming up and getting their opportunity. I mean, I get it'd be tough for her to get her. I can't potentially in these two, probably not going to happen, but yeah, it's exciting to see them at least get an opportunity to train with the senior squad and hopefully make that kind of impact there.
Yeah, absolutely. Squads is as follows: Jenna Fyfe, Lee Gibson, Sandy McKeever, Jenna Clark, Rachel Corsi, Nicola Docherty, Catherine Hill, Sophie Howard, Rachel McLaughlin, Fiona Brown, Eric Cuthbert, no, Kirsten Corner, actually. I'm based on the squad that went out a couple of weeks ago on Twitter. So Kirsten Corner, not Erin Cuthbert, Lisa Evans, Christy Grimshaw, Kirsten McQueen, Jamie Lee Napier, Amy Rogers, Jenny Smith, Warren Davidson, Claire Emsley, Amy Gallagher, Kirsty Hansen, Kirsty Hout, and Martha Thomas. Claire, I don't know if you agree, but I've seen Gemma Fife a few times this season, and I think she's improved her game. But also, speaking from a Rangers perspective, I think Nicola Docherty has been a really top player for Rangers this season. You've touched on McLaughlin, but I've seen Nicola Docherty a few times either in the flesh or on the telly, and I've been impressed with Nicola Docherty. I think she's took the captain's role on very well.
Nick's a very experienced player. She's a talented player, and folk look up to her. So I'm not surprised she got the captaincy, and I think she has taken to it well. She'll absolutely love it. But I'm delighted for her. But she has, she's probably another player that she does like to go forward, but probably not in the way that Rachel McLaughlin does. If you watch the games, and you probably see that. A lot of the time, Rachel McLaughlin will be allowed to go down the right, and Nick Dock will kind of do the more cover role along with Cathy Hill and centre mid or whatever to cover in. She's pretty adaptable in their game. She can do that, and she's got goals in her as well with her right and left foot. So it's a player that you want in your squad, absolutely. So she has some player. And sorry, who was the other one you mentioned?
It's the goalie.
Eh?
Jenna, the goalie.
Oh, Jenna. And Jenna Clark as well. Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. I'd actually watched one of her games playing for Liverpool the other week, and I thought she had an excellent game. So, and I think going down there will probably lift her game to another level. Was really impressed with her. And, she's obviously felt it's the time for her to leave Glasgow City and move on to new things. So I think it's onwards and upwards. She's still a really young player, even though she's been in and around the league for a number of years. She is still really young and still learning the game. So I think it's about giving folk opportunities. If you don't give folk opportunities, how are you meant to know what they can do?
Who do you think, Eva, is playing McCorsey defence? Is it Clark? Is it Cathy Hill? Is it anybody else?
No, I think Cathy Hill will probably might get a shot. I think that would be exciting. But I think Jenna Clark is, if we're choosing between those two, Jenna Clark will probably get the opportunity. I think she's shown at the under 21s most recently. She's obviously had a few call-ups for the senior squad. I was actually down in Liverpool a couple of weeks ago. I got to see her play against Aston Villa. She was the one, she was one of the star players, absolutely. So I think Jenna Clark is will fit in quite well there. Like I say, she's already had a couple of starts.
Liverpool won that game, did they?
They did. I think it was 2-0.
Did Corsi play that game?
She did. Of course, she was playing. It was very strange, but on the other side of not rooting for Rachel Corsi. But yeah, it was a yeah, she was playing. It's just really
Wasn't
exciting to see so many Scottish players, playing down there.
that game she picked up her eye, was it? The black eye.
No, it wasn't that one. It wasn't that one.
Yeah. Right, okay. Not much changes in terms of the squad, of course. Obviously, Cornet coming in, but pretty much same as usual, Eva. Just for these next few games coming up, just same as usual, basically.
Yeah, I think it's exciting seeing people like Kirsty Howitt come in. Obviously, Kirsty got the last the late call up to replace Emma Watson in the last kind of Nations League matches. But no, I think it's exciting that Kirsty Howitt's got that call up as well. That's probably one of the only people who are different from the last call up sheet, other than the other ones you mentioned. But there's loads of them who've kind of shown their worth in their other club level. I mean, Jamie Lee Napier had an outstanding weekend there, an assist and a clearance off the goal line. And yeah, so there's quite a few people have really shown their worth. But yeah.
I'll need to pronounce his name correctly. Is it Robert Villaham? Tottenham manager.
Well, I'm not sure.
But anyway, just for context here, he's been quite impressed with Martha Thomas.
Oh
Do you
yeah.
agree with that, Eva?
Oh, 100%. Like I think that move to Tottenham has done her so well. I think she's been given this opportunity now to like show the striker that I think anyone who's watched her has known that she could be, and just going that hat trick at the weekend has kind of proven that. But no, she's a real star, and I'm really pleased to see her taken off down south.
Yeah, Amy Gall come back in the squad again, and I think it'll be good for her to be back in the squad just to give her a bit more experience again.
Yeah, no, we spoke about Amy Gallagher at the last kind of podcast, just about her getting her first call up, and I think we know she's a really exciting player, and you know these back to back matches against the Netherlands are going to be incredibly tough. It'll be tough for any player coming in, especially young players, but hopefully she does get some minutes and get the opportunity and get to experience it a bit more. She got a few minutes in the last kind of matches, but. Yeah, she's a real talent coming up. It's really exciting to see how many of them are coming up and getting their kind of first call-ups for the Scotland squad.
You get to do a lot of punditry opportunities for the Scotland women's team, Claire, or are you more rooted to club level?
I've done a couple of things, but mostly club level I do. The last Scotland thing I done was when they played the Philippines. I done
Okay.
that game. But no, mostly just club games.
How do you think Scotland will get on in the next few games? Because tough assignments coming up.
I think it's going to be hard, isn't it? It's a really difficult group they've got. There's no getting away from that. But they've come out and said it themselves. It's exactly where they want to be. So it's the games they want to be playing in. I think, if I'm honest, they're going to find it tough against the Netherlands. They've got some quality players, but you know, all they can do can only control what they can do, and they need to try and nullify their threats. So. You know, you never know. Scotland have got a way of surprising you, so I'm really hoping for some kind of result. I think we need to get a result, certainly in at least one of the games. So we'll just need to see what happens, but it's going to be really difficult.
By the way, Eva, a name that actually goes under the radar a little bit. And I was surprised because I don't really know much about this player, Jenny Smith.
Yeah, I didn't know much. I don't know much about her either. Again, another name that was on the sheet that I didn't know much about. She plays for, is it Celtic? She plays for Jess. I don't know much about her. She's
Claire, on you go, sorry.
no, I was just going to say she played for Hearts last year.
Oh, aye,
She
okay.
was really good. So she's a really quick player. So she played in the wing a lot for Hearts last season, and she's obviously got a move to Celtic this season. So. She's obviously just trying to embed into that squad. She's playing a slightly different role, right enough, at Celtic than she was at Hearts. So, I mean, she's a young talent as well. She's capable. She's got goals in her. So, again, just like Eva had said, you know, it's full of young players coming in. So, it's just about seeing what they can do and giving them the opportunities on the pitch.
Miss Evans could reach our potential landmark of 100 caps, Claire, should she feature in either of the matches against Holland, and that'd be a terrific achievement for Lisa Evans if she was to achieve that.
It would be, and you know, I'm sure she will achieve it. In one of these games, she's a very reliable player. She's very experienced. You know, it tends to turn to her often and brings her on. So if she doesn't start, so I'm sure she will. She's been around for years. I played with her at Glasgow City, and you know what a player she is. She's so quick. She's so reliable. You know, one of those players that just does her job and gets on with it and works very hard. So. I'm not surprised to see that she's about to reach her 100th cap, and congratulations to her. I'm sure she'll get it.
Eva, I was just going to go back to yourself just briefly. How do you reflect on the start of the season in terms of, sorry, the last, pardon me, I'll take that back. How do you reflect on the last few games from a Scotland perspective in terms of how do you assess the performances for both those games?
Yeah, I think we played really well against England. I think we were just unlucky in how that worked out. I think the performance against Belgium was maybe a bit more disappointing. I think getting that last minute equaliser was a bonus, and I'm glad we got it. We managed to get a point out of it. But I think it maybe gave us a bit of a wake up call. I think we're just unfortunate with the way that happened. You know, Caroline Weir picking up that injury incredibly early on. You know, Emma Watson getting pulled out of the squad for injury as well. But yeah, I think we should base it more on what we did during the England match. I think we played incredibly well. against that, you know, one of the best teams in the world. And I think that's what we should, the mindset that they should be going into when they play the Netherlands as well, because again, one of the best teams in the world. And we've shown that we can, you know, we can take a fight to them. But yeah, the game was just a blip, to be honest. And I think it was. I think it was just a whole host of things happening at once. Changes having to be made, injuries getting picked up, and just a bit of disappointment. But I'm just glad we managed to get the point out of it at literally the last minute.
Well, you being an ex-player, how would you approach a back-to-back situation where you're playing games back-to-back?
It really is just that old cliche where you just take one game at a time. There's no point in looking forward to the second game. You know, you need to concentrate on the game that's in front of you, and I think that's what they'll do, because they need to just need to take each game as it comes, because what happens in the first game might change their approach slightly to the second game. So they will, and I know it's what folk come out and say all the time, but it is true. They will just be looking at Friday, and they'll be analysing Friday, and they'll be seeing what they can do for Friday night, and then once that's passed, they'll see what situation you're in, and then they'll look to make a game plan for the Tuesday.
Yeah. How important is these next two games, do you feel, in terms of petrol, just trying to get a result of some kind?
And they are important. That's, I think they do. I think they do need to get something at least out of one of them. You know, a win would be amazing, but really, you know, it's difficult because we're obviously at the bottom of the group, so you're really not wanting to be there. You're really wanting to be obviously in the top two, but if not, then the third place position. So they can't really afford, I don't think, to not get in from these two games. Then you're looking at the last two games where you're under so much pressure. So they're going to know that, you know, they're going to know exactly what's at stake, but they can only look to this game on Friday just now. If they start looking too far ahead to the game on Tuesday and then the game against England and Belgium, you know, your head's getting away from you. You need to just focus on the job at hand, which is Friday night right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Eva, we were discussing this a wee while back in the podcast, the second last podcast to the one we're doing tonight, obviously. We were saying about how the England game could get a big crowd. And I think the next few games are important to try and entice that extra few hundred or extra few thousand to go along to happen in December for that England game.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm actually going out to Nijmegen to see the away match as well on
Okay.
Friday. But no, for the home matches, absolutely. I think that the SFA should be doing, I said it before, doing all they can to try and fill the stadium, and get as many supporters there as possible. You know, we hear a lot in the press about, you know, support for women's football and the increase, which it absolutely is, more people getting involved in it. And I think a great introductory to that is getting them along to a Scotland women's match, especially in these, you know, huge matches for us, you know, against the Netherlands and against England. And I think I said a couple of podcasts ago, I think that work start it should have started then, but it absolutely starts now. I think England have shown again, there's more of a market there for the Lionesses brand just now, but they've shown what can be done. Australia have shown it. I think they've just sold out some of their upcoming friendlies. Back home in Australia, but yeah, I think there's no reason why we can't sell at Hampden, or at least try to at least that be the goal. I think just now they're still only opening certain sections. I know that's something that the team have raised in the past about the level of ambition for trying to sell out Hampden. But yeah, it absolutely should be our goal. And if it doesn't sell out completely, then fine. But at least they know they've tried and trying to get as many people there as possible, because say these are huge matches against some of the best players in the world. And yeah, it'd be great to see hundreds, if not thousands, more people there at Hampden to support the team.
Because I'm not going to use this podcast as a pick on the SFA type of thing, but I'm looking at Scottish national team's Twitter, and there's quite a bit of content from obviously training and everything, but there's a wee bit from like today, for example. I'm just having a look here. There's five, six, seven. Fair enough. There's eight posts related to training for a lead up to Friday, but today can also be a perfect opportunity, or tomorrow or Friday could be the perfect opportunity to get a link on saying tickets available for Tuesday or tickets available for Friday if you want to go across the Holland.
Yeah, no, I know 100%. And I think my biggest bugbear is that, if you went online to try and buy tickets for the match on Tuesday, a lot of the blocks are already sold out. So why are we not opening more? Why are we not, there's very limited seating available. So again, that ambition, if they're not there for people to buy, people aren't going to see it. Or if they go on and see there's only single seats available, they're not going to bother. So again, it's trying to get that kind of hype up. Because I think the advertisement's there. I mean, it might be because that's the kind of things I'm interested in. I'm getting adverts all the time for it, but I think we need to kind of, expand out. And I, again, it might, maybe it's the SFA, maybe it's them reaching out to other stakeholders to say, look, how do we do this better? Because other teams are doing it, other nations are doing it. There's no reason why we can't, at least have that level of ambition, because I think it'd be amazing. I think it happened in the send-off match before the World Cup against Jamaica. It almost sold, but so why do we not do it again? That level of trying sell out, and that be the messaging to try and sell something out, or at least, yeah, have that level of ambition, like I say.
Absolutely. Claire, for the game next week, do you think the fact that there's very little men's football, I know there's a full championship card on next Tuesday in the men's game, but do you think the fact that we've not got a lot of premiership games, the men's game on Tuesday could help? Because, correct me if I'm wrong here, even Claire, but was it not the last time when Scotland played Belgium there was a massive game on? I'm trying to forget, I'm trying to remember which game it was now, but I remember there was a massive game and it kind of affected the attendance a little bit. Correct me if I'm wrong though.
I can't think that far back, to be honest with you, about what game was won. But you're probably right. It seems to be that women's football seems to clash all the time with men's games, whether it's just domestic games or national games or whatever it might be. They just seem to clash all the time. But yeah, I agree with you, but I just think that the ambition has to be there. I think you have to try and push it somehow, and it's even if you're going to other nations to say, how did you approach this? Don't get me wrong. I mean, I think if we could qualify for the Euros, it would just kick it on. It would just naturally take it on, because then folk, I know it's not fair to say, but it's probably true, folk would maybe then become more invested in it because you're actually in a tournament. But I think that would massively help it. But yeah, I think there has to be more ambition there, because I think the market's there for it. I think it's been there for a long time. It's just not been pushed on until the last few years. So, they're achieving immensely over the years with the little resources they had, and look to where they've got. So, yeah, I think it's about time we try to find ways to get behind them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, we've got a good product on the park. I mean, the domestic game is doing very well. Nationally, sorry, we're doing very, very well as well, Claire.
Yeah, well, it is. It's just exactly what I say. Well, the clubs, they're trying to do their part. It's obviously, I know money comes into it. It's a big what investment folk can put into it, in terms of club football. And then obviously that can have an impact. I mean, I've said this time and time again, I think the reason that the national team started to do so well was because a lot of players were playing out with Scotland before. Now Scotland have started to become professional. You can see that also grown with the national team and the improvements in performance there as well. I think it's all comes together. So it's just trying to grow the game as much as possible. And I don't know what the answer is. If I had it, I would be trying to do something about it. It's difficult. It's just trying to get folk along. If you get them along, they can make their mind up. But if you've not seen it, how do you know if you like it or not?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, there's a lot of people involved in football, Claire, that are men's football orientated. But I like a mixture of both. And there's a lot of people in my situation that are a mixture of both. Where, yeah, they like the number the men's game, but they also like the women's game, where there is a bit of the number and grumble, but at the same time as well, there's good football teams that play football the right way.
Well, that's it. I mean, I'm the same. I like men's football and I like women's football. I just like football, really. But no, it's you can't, the thing is, see if you watch women's football and you don't like it, you can't then argue with that. It's everybody likes what they like, and you're entitled to that, and that's fine. But you need to try and encourage folk along to see if they actually like the game or not. So it's how can you make it as available as possible? And it's great that, yeah, television, it's on TV and stuff. It is amazing. And I encourage that massively to continue to put games on TV, but it's still not the same as actually being at a game. You don't see everything, you don't get the atmosphere, you don't get a feel for the team as such through a TV screen the way you would if you actually went to a game. So I think it's just, as I said, I don't know what the answer is, but I think it's massive that we continue to try and push it nationally, but also at a domestic level, because I think it's still way behind where we could be.
Are you going to the game on Tuesday, Eva?
Yeah. Doing the
What, how would
post.
you how would you think that how do you think the atmosphere is going to be for Tuesday?
Yeah, I think it'll be good. I think obviously we've got a bit of competing interest. You've got obviously Halloween, where a lot of the young families and stuff who would normally go might be preoccupied. I think it's also because it's quite a late night fixture, which I've seen some people comment on that it's maybe not accessible. But I think it will still be a good turnout. I think it will be a good atmosphere. It's always a good atmosphere at the women's matches at Hampden. But yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. And again, it's top players on both sides. World class on the Holland side who made it almost made it to the late stages of the World Cup, but also some of the rising stars and the stars of the Scotland team. So no, I think it'll be a really good match, and no doubt a great atmosphere. It's always good at Hampden.
Do you think Holland have to win? Do you think they have to get 6 points? Or if they don't get 6 points, is there not going to be any pressure?
I think they'll be, from the recent results, obviously beating England, but getting beat by Belgium, which I think would have came as a shock to them. They probably feel they have something to show in this game, especially the first one, to see where that goes. And then if Scotland happen to win or they get a draw out of it, then the pressure probably will be on for Tuesday with the Netherlands. But yeah, they probably don't see it. I think they potentially will get a bit complacent, and think that Scotland are they will get a result against Scotland anyway. And I think that's when Scotland can take their chances and show up, which we often do, and do what Scotland do best and surprise us.
How do you think the game is going to go on Friday, first and foremost, Eva?
Again, I don't know. I've heard there's about 40 or 50 travelling fans, so I think it'll be a decent wee turnout. But yeah, again, you just don't know. You just don't know. I think when the Netherlands have had their fair share of injuries, you've obviously got Mead and Madge coming back. I highly doubt she'll be starting. She only got a couple of minutes with Arsenal last week. But Ruud is absolutely unstoppable. She is some player, and I think that Scotland will obviously be focusing a lot on her. But they've had their fair share of injuries, like I say, Van Domselaar, their goalie was out a couple of weeks ago. I hear Janssen's picked up an injury in training, so they might not be at their 100% as well. I would hope again that Scotland will just take the chances when we can, and again, that's all we need is one or two chances to take them, and who knows what can happen. But yeah, I wouldn't rule them out. Even on paper, it might be a one-sided battle. I don't think that's what we'll see on the pitch.
Last question. We need to Friday. We'll set the tone for Tuesday. You there?
Sorry, you
Oh,
asking me?
no, Eva.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, what was
The
that?
weather was a freeze there.
No, I kind of broke up from you there. Sorry.
Ah, okay. Sorry. And then, sorry, Friday we'll set the tone for Tuesday.
Yeah, no, I get that, and like I say, I think Holland will want to get a result against us there. But like I say, if Scotland happen to win or we manage to get a draw out of it could set the tone for Tuesday in the second match and the expectation there. Yeah, I think it'll be two good matches. And if Scotland get a result away, it'll be amazing and set us up for a real really really exciting match on Tuesday.
Okay, time for a quiz. We're going to do a Caps quiz again. Claire Gemmell wasn't looking forward to this one. She got told with a minute to go before recording, but Here we go. What it'll be is we'll do a cap quiz. So it'll be a goalie from each team. It'll be a defender from each team. It'll be a midfielder and a forward from each country. So your first one is as follows. Who's got the most caps? Is it Jenna Fyfe or is it Jacinta Weimar?
I'm going to see Jenna Fyfe.
I'll go with you, man.
Yeah, it's Jenna Fyfe. 10 caps for Jenna Fyfe. One cap for Jacinta Weimar. Right, next up, we are going to go for Nicola Docherty against Mirelle van Dongen.
I'm gonna go. This is just a complete guess, by the way. I'm gonna go with Van Dongen.
I'll go Nick Doc then.
Well, you're right. It's 61 Van Dongen to Doc, who's picked up 47.
Oh, there you go.
Right. Midfield. Who's got the most caps? Lisa Evans or Jill Ruard? Ruard. I think it's Ruard.
Real. I'll go
Lisa.
Jill Roth.
I'll go Lisa.
Thank
Lisa
Claire, you're right again.
you.
90. Yeah, you're right, Claire. 99 for Lisa. 99 for Lisa Evans to 94 for Jill Ruard. And finally, the striking department. This won't be a surprise as such, but we'll go ahead with it anyway. Vivian Miedema against Claire Emsley.
Me the man.
Yes, me the man.
Yeah. By the way, the differences in terms of the cap totals for the strikers in both countries is absolutely ridiculous. You've got Luke Martens 152, Miedema 115, Lenef Beerenstein, I think that's how you
Fine.
pronounce
Yeah,
it,
Ben and Stein.
96. Renate Jansen, 58, Esme Bruce, 24, and Katjana Snodgrass, 22. And by the way, I do not do Dutch at school before you ask the question. Elsewhere for Scotland, Warren Davidson, 12, Claire Emsley, 54, Amy Gallagher, 2, Kirsty Hansen, 22. Kirsty, how have you been? I'm surprised Kirsty Hansen's not played for Scotland.
Not seen your cat, no. Never.
I'm astonished. So I've seen Kermit banging the goals for fun and Estima PL1, yet I'm astonished to find out she's not played for Scotland yet.
Yeah, our first cap was that one. No, our first call up, sorry, was just that one where Emma Watson was injured.
Oh yeah, okay. That's startling to say the least. And yeah, on to my point, Martha Thomas with 28 caps. So yeah, absolutely. So thank you very much to everybody for tuning in. Much appreciated. Claire, Eva, anything else just before we wrap up?
No, I think just looking forward to the two Scotland matches coming up. I'm sure we'll be able to analyse them at some point. We'll see the results in the next couple of days.
Yeah, I'll second that. Hoping for a
By the way, I
Scotland
didn't get my
result.
ticket.
Absolutely.
Right, thank you very much, guys, and all the very best to you both, and all the best to the viewers at home who are going to be listening in. So, all the best, and thank you very much for listening.